Blog Talk Radio.
After years of character development forged in the refining fires of life, a talk show host emerges onto the stage unlike any other. Speaking with a voice of thunder, with wit and wisdom gushing forth like a sparkling spring in a dry, desolate land. His practical insight and resolve gives him a passport to the hearts and minds of an audience desperately seeking truth and integrity. Arriving on the scene just in time to save humanity, here he is, a vitamin pill with legs. This is the Tony Venuti Show. And here's your host, Tony Venuti!
Where's the sound effects? I need to be screeching. I need to come screeching to a halt just in the nick of time, almost into the wall. Welcome, folks, while we go attempting to jump a hurdle, never mind hitting a wall, to the ex-conservative radio hour. 2 hours every day I preach virtue, baby. That's right. It's all about the good and the bad and the evil against virtue. That's all liberalism and conservatism is. But I bring it to you from the perspective of it's a culture, stupid. It's who we are. It's who we are, what we become. How we all have been used, all of us, every last one of us, no matter what color or creed we are, we have all been usurped from the most exceptional philosophical understanding of the way human beings should coexist that has ever been developed. It was called capitalism, conservatism, as Edmund Burke so articulated it. Very good, Tony. Now, I think I was almost going liberally there. I wanted to say eloquently. You know, liberals will do that, right? So, eloquently. Hey, that's a great report. Hey, that's a great report you did. Great report from Israel today. That was a great report. That was a great report. All the self-congratulations. But, folks, I'm here to talk to you simply from man to man, you know. Come on, girls, you can dig that, right? I mean, that's what the feminist movement has. It really is in this context, man to man, human to human. And I don't judge, but I assess. I try to see things from the eyes of a child, filtered from which, before we've been programmed with fear or greed or any kind of the power of suggestion that those who are responsible for giving you the information that goes between your two ears ends up being the kind of information that is symbolic, that carries forth a real sense of the truth as opposed to manufactured desires of utopia. In exchange for the fact that, oh, we just want to control you. You let us control you as long as we give you the bare substance. We're going to give you your bare needs. We're even going to give you a cell phone for 250 minutes if you fall, about in the same guidelines now that if you even dared ask for food stamps these days, you'd get them. Oh, sure. You see, we as your federal government, we are currently advertising. We are currently reaching out for all you people that are hungry. Of course you don't know that you're hungry. But we're here to feed you because we love you. We love you so much, yes. Because you can't take care of yourself. You're stupid. We've been working at it for a long time to make you stupid. You got it? So now that you're stupid, if you can get food stamps, you can even get a cell phone. Yes, only 250 minutes. Only 250 minutes. We've got partners, after all, in corporations, in the capital system that we convert a little bit, pervert. the free marketplace that crony capitalism to create a false sense of right and wrong or fair market principles, you know. Well, you're not going to know any better. What you don't know won't hurt you. Leave me alone. Let me continue explaining as I continue to explain to you the hand that will feed you so that you will learn not to bite it.
Folks, I'm your eyewitness.
I've been watching this stuff from the 50s, and I'm here to tell you all about it. You ready? We're going to have a class. Oh, it's just, no, I'm not sure exactly what subject we're going to go on, but you'll like it. But, you know, I am going to focus on a few things, though. I'm going to talk about Americans' exceptionalism having symbolically just been erased with one fell flyover of the White House with our greatest treasure of them all, our greatest symbolic representation of America's exceptionalism. What isn't that what you think? Come on. Liberalism is full of understanding when it comes to symbolism. These diabolical, brainwashing manipulators that understand exactly what you don't understand. It's child's play to them. It's absolutely child's play to them. And here we have what is what I've seen since the 50s. I see with Obama and the breaking down of everything that is good. I've been seeing it through the years. We gave up the Panama Canal. We've been giving our trades and our secrets for eons. We've been educating foreigners so they can go back to their home and plot to kill us. Oh, you know, those little things. Details, details, details. All you need to understand from me is my understanding. And I bring it to you from an experiential standpoint, having experienced evil, having articulated it, having played upon you and being played upon by others and having paid the price. But I'm here to tell you, conservatism is cool, and that's where I bring a fresh outlook to things that, as far as I'm concerned, invalidate any liberal's pretense as to knowing otherwise. They don't have a clue. They can't say anything to me. They haven't had enough bad to know what good is, and they don't know how to. And I haven't seen too many people of virtue know how to wrestle that argument back when it comes to the victimization, the establishment of guilt, so that you're leveraged to afford a certain charity that if you weren't, you'd look bad. So before you know it, you're going to just simply feel your way through the idea that anybody who's needy and are different than you, oh, you're just going to do the right thing, aren't you? You're just going to do the right thing, aren't you? I've been seeing this through the filter of an Italian, not of a white, not of a black. I've been watching the liberal Marxists. All roads lead back to Marx, folks. And what we have is a Marxist in the White House. Come on, Obama is. See, I can't get on the radio talking this stuff. I really thought I was going to be able to, but I guess I'm just going to have to grab one listener at a time. I do a lot of Facebook. We'll be doing some sharing on some of the Facebook threads. Because I'll tell you what, I don't know, this is as close to a cathartic exercise for me as it is a patriotic thing. Because let me tell you something, prior to 3 years ago, nobody knew about my background, not even my wife. So from the perspective of an ex-con, was in and out of prison a dozen times over 15 years, committing petty crimes, being a low class, living in the low class, understanding the low class, and all the rules of the street that go with it are exactly the experiences liberals articulate so well in their manner. But what did you see when you saw that? You know, when I woke up this morning and had some coffee and a second cup of coffee and even a third cup of coffee, and you know, watching Fox and seeing that they were talking about the shuttle coming home to roost. Sada, huh? Sada, huh? You know, to me, that was the closing of a chapter, folks. Matter of fact, I don't know if that was the closing of a chapter, maybe for this, or the closing of a book. What was the shuttle's ride home today like? Was it a closing of a chapter, or was it a closing of a book? And I mean, the last of its kind book. Do you understand the complexity in the culture from which generations of students to early with no experience engineers who pioneered the actuality of the physicalness of what turned out to be something that could fly to the moon and back? Without the support, without the substance, without feeding it. You know, we could bring up a couple other analogies while we're at that one now, can't we? This could never be replicated again. It took 30 or 40 or 50 years to get us to there. You think these things happen overnight? It's like anything else. It's a lot quicker to destruct something, isn't it? Isn't it a lot easier to destruct something than put something together to begin with and maintain it? Oh, how boring is that? Oh, how boring is that? I know we've been using it for so many years. It's that same old thing. We have to have progress. Let's tear it down. Oh, don't worry about it. If we tear it down, we can always put it back together. No, you can't. No, you can't. It's comical, actually. And there almost should be a comedic attempt at having some kind of improvisational anti-conservative or anti-liberal kind of comedy, so that we could really make fun of them, because you know why? It's a natch, man. It's a natural. It's downright simple. When you think about it, everything they do, you can sort of make an analogy to how children are. Or how immature people are. And it's amazing, folks, how immaturity and age have nothing to do with one another most of the time. Much to my disappointment. And we're losing it more and more. We're being instigated by the forces of not good. You know? By the forces of not good. Something called evil. Oh, how boring. Oh, how old-fashioned. Oh, how fuddy-duddy. So how did you feel about the shuttle? Here's what I was thinking, too, as, you know, they were showing some images. This is in my DNA growing up through the 50s and the 60s and the shuttles and the space thing. I remember thinking that it was a feat, that it was pure genius to get that shuttle back. I remember how... Especially early on. You know, now it's so routine, isn't it? But look how quick an accident we've been learning that in the modern era, haven't we? So you know just how specific and how downright dear, but for the grace of God, does an accident occur? You know, cataclysmic. Horrific machines when not everything running perfectly like a clock. So here they bring the shuttle home And I was amazed that they did a flyover and then they overflew it on purpose to do another roundabout. Yeah, I, you know, I didn't think that stuff was that kind of, how shall I say, glib. To me, that's a real glib kind of approach to what needs to be done, which is to get that puppy on the ground. Because, again, they're but for the grace of God, right? You take your things for granted. But more importantly, I say to myself, okay, so they, maybe it's my, maybe things really have gotten so good over the years, Tony, that it's really not easy for them to do something that easy. Okay, fine. But then I take it out further. And I say to myself, what's the message here? Is this a celebration? Hey, is this like bringing the boys back from the war zone before the war is over or after the war is over? What is this like? Is this like Vietnam with the boys coming home? Is this like Iraq with the boys coming? Is this like World War II with the boys coming home? Or is it just what it is, which is symbolic of the most greatest accomplishment that one could ever consider?
Finally, if we are to win the battle that is now going on around the world between freedom and tyranny, the dramatic achievements in space which occurred in recent weeks should have made clear to us all, as did the Sputnik in 1957, the impact of this adventure on the minds of men everywhere who are attempting to make a determination of which road they should take. Since early in my term, our efforts in space have been under review. With the advice of the Vice President, who is Chairman of the National Space Council, we have examined where we are strong and where we are not. We go into space because whatever mankind must undertake, free man must fully share. I therefore have asked the Congress, above and beyond the increases I have earlier requested in space activities, to provide the funds which are needed to meet the following national goals. First, I believe that this nation should commit itself to achieving a goal before this decade is out of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the Earth. No single space project in this period will be more impressive to mankind or more important for the long-range exploration of space. None will be so difficult or expensive to accomplish. This gives promise of someday providing a means for even more exciting and ambitious exploration of space, perhaps beyond the moon, perhaps to the very end of the solar system itself. Third, an additional $50 million will make the most of our present leadership by accelerating the use of space satellites for worldwide communication. Fourth, an additional $75 million, of which $53 million is for the Weather Bureau, will help give us at the earliest possible time a satellite system for worldwide weather observation. Let it be clear, and this is a judgment which the members of the Congress must finally make, let it be clear that I am asking the Congress and the country to accept a firm commitment to a new course of action, a course which will last for many years and carry very heavy costs, $531 million in fiscal 62, and an estimated $7 to $9 billion additional over the next 5 years. If we are to go only halfway or reduce our sights in the face of difficulty, in my judgment, it would be better not to go at all. Now, this is a choice which this country must make, and I'm confident that under the leadership of the space committees of the Congress and the appropriating committees that you will consider the matter kept. It is a most important decision that we make as a nation. But all of you have lived through the last 4 years and have seen the significance of space and the adventures in space. And no one can predict with certainty what the ultimate meaning will be of mastery of space.
brilliant stuff, huh? Wasn't that just brilliant stuff? Gosh, that was 50 years ago, gang. 50 years ago, I was about 12 years old. You see, that's what I'm talking about. I understand what was happening today. I think it was a stick in the eye. I think it was a stick in the eye by the socialist Obama regime. I really do. To let us know, in no uncertain terms, this was a celebration of the end of something. The celebration of ending something. That's how I see it. I think it was a stick in the eye of Americans' exceptionalism. Don't you think the space program is iconic to America's perception, to its mythical orientation that sometimes without even thinking, people just know and understand, and it's through this imagery of what NASA has done, of our trips to the moon, of what John F. Kennedy gave us 8 years to accomplish, and we did. And look how quick we unravel it. And I've been seeing the downhill trend of the pop culture trampling our traditional culture with the help of music. I'll be right back.
Blog Talk Radio.
After years of character development, forged in the refining fires of life, a talk show host emerges onto the stage unlike any other. Speaking with a voice of thunder, with wit and wisdom gushing forth like a sparkling spring in a dry, desolate land, his practical insight and resolve gives him a passport to the hearts and minds of an audience desperately seeking truth and integrity. Arriving on the scene just in time to save humanity, here he is, a vitamin pill with legs. This is the Tony Venuti Show. And here's your host, Tony Venuti!
I just had it. I'm serious. I've had it up to here, you know. Haven't you? Haven't you had it? Well, now I've got it. I've got a rant and roll. I know what I know. Unlike most of you that think you know, you think. Unlike most of you, and you, and you, and yes, maybe even you, indeed, not only me, but gosh, 2 and 3 aren't great numbers, now are they? You see, I've been watching this, and I've just had it. I've had it up to here. Haven't come down there from there in hell. The hell we fear not, indeed fear not. Italian, never white, always American, but not recognized. No, why Italian? The wine with the waters parted, diluted to a hyphen. Assimilate, dilate, dilute, pollute with abundanza. Pollute that which is the water to the wine. Yes, waters parted, now we're white. I'm telling you, I've had it. I've had it up to here. Check it out. Not all things are black and white. Italian, I am. Wrong, oh, right. Rules to break. Satisfy the needs. Rules to break. Pay the price. Fall on the sword. Accept the heat. Rules to break. The fun we make. Do as I say, not as I do. Were the rules we had to follow, but you got caught. Was the burden for which price paid. You compete with life. Do all you want. Do all you want. The risk, but oh, it's fun. Pay the price. Shut your mouth. Oh, woe is me, Dad, bail me out, I don't belong. Take him out, officer, that's my son. The Joneses, while being swept up, wood must keep up. Never mind, air is thin, awareness is thinner, feeling faint, so high, looking down on others. Lucky are we. The anointed ones, yes, the anointed, we know better, ooh, better than those, and yes, even those who think We know. You see, folks, not all things are black and white.
Hey, I'm going to do it for you, folks. Tony Vidotti, impolitically correct, beyond pew. And here we go.
You know how I feel.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
You know,
and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible,
you know,
with life, liberty,
it's a new dawn,
and the pursuit of happiness.
It's a new
for all.
Day. It's a new
this is Tony Vidotti you're listening to, and politically correct, beyond pew. I'm here each and every week, 10 o'clock Mondays. And I'll see you
and
soon, because I'm feeling
good.
I'm live. Rant and roll, baby. Now, how would rock and roll? We're going to rant and roll, huh? We're going to do a little beat poetry. We're going to do a little rant. We're going to do a little rap. No, I'm not going to do rap. I'm going to talk about the rap that I had to pay the price, and I took the rap. Wait a minute. How do you take the rap for something when you're guilty? Does taking the rap mean that you're simply guilty of something, or does taking the rap sort of imply or infer, however that works, that you got caught up in something and you're taking the rap? Huh? But anyway, welcome, folks, to another edition of Tony's Life. It's my show, baby. It's a Tony Vidotti show. After all, it's our reality show. It's my reality. I'm bringing it to you from the 50s, the 60s. I'm bringing you the whole nine yards. And I'm going to be back in a few minutes because right now I fear that you're all listening to a vacuum cleaner, just sucking up that which we shouldn't be listening to. Evil.
Everyone.
can't wait. I can't wait for the end of that scene. I just want to get back to you all because my mind's just stirring up. Hey, that little link I sent you, not very important. It's just illustrating to you that if you come to Tucson, I need you to play in my pool tournament, okay? Come beat Tony. You can't beat this guy. Oh, I told you. I told you. This is a reality show, folks. This is my reality as it relates to what is in this world today that so many of us have an understanding that's intuitive but not yet knowing how to put it in words. As I relate to you, I am my audience. That which is attracted to you describes you. I am guilty by association. You can depend on me to be reflective to the whom that people associate with me. I take pride in that because I'll tell you what, I got some pretty hefty, heady friends, okay? Anyway, I want to talk about media's deception. I want to talk about media's in quotation. I don't think media ought to live with an asterisk, don't you think? I'm talking about media in general and just about everybody except conservative talk radio in particular, with the exception that even I have to police conservative talk radio because they're all subject to being, you know, having some interests, some self-interest that might get into selfish interests. Of course, it's to the degree of which, right? And everything being relative, but yet there seems to be nobody fair out there, fair-minded, someone who has virtue, someone who isn't just looking to distort things to make their correctness be the right correctness. Hey, how correct is your righteousness? Is your righteousness correct? Check it out today on your righteousness detector. I think we should have a righteousness detector. I think we need to start scoring every media outlet. I think we need to start scoring the debates. It seems that the person that won the latest debate is the one that's the lead. Unlike a sports team where you've got somebody won, somebody lost, you know, those particular wins was won by that score, those particular wins were won by this score. But I think we should do more than just add up wins and losses and who came in first, who came in second. We should be, you know, if you look at four or five or six candidates, they should all be given points for what place they came in your estimation. But I got a new way of thinking using natural law, how to assess and score so that it's fair. And it's all about plus, minus, and neutral. It's all about that. Imagine, like last night, okay, now check it out. I missed the debate, and it turns out that it seems as I'm pulling it in piece by piece, and of course, it depends who you're listening to, depends on who won it, right? But apparently Santorum had a pretty strong night, you know, coming at it with the, again, he's been solid and the least besmirched because he's been lagging all the time. Speaking of virtue in the higher order. So I think he's always been shining that light. But overall, I don't think he has the gravitas, if you will, that Gingrich has and Romney pretends to have and the media is trying to convince us of it. Now, tell me the media isn't intent on having Romney as the player to be. I'll tell you what it tells me. They're scared out of their wits that Gingrich might be elected. They're scared out of their wits that conservative values might come full circle and these industries that depend, follow the money. We have an industry called broadcasting. Communications that's owned by four people. They're all intertwined one way or the other with all the money that's being sucked up and wasted by the government. Yesterday, all over the airwaves was this, this cool lobbyist thief that, is touting the fact that he has seen the light and he has redemption. He's, hey, come on. He's taking the same tack I'm using, having been there, done that, and now speaking of, speaking of what should be, and at least that's I thought this guy was good. You know, what's his name, Jack Abrams? And, but understand something. This guy's to be who he is, to have injected himself in every area of the government there is, with every industry there is. For him, in his gravitas, if you will, in his ability to, how shall I say, John, you know, and Tom over there, and Billy Bob, you know, I got some information on you. You know that. You know what I know. I know you know that I know that. So he's in the stature of how shall I say, Hollywood sexability. Scandal. Tabloid journalism. Oh, he's right up there. I was actually applauding the thought that he was going to, how shall I say, pull the covers off of everything. It would have been interesting to see Abram pull the covers off of everything and see how it affects everything. But I'm afraid he's been used. He's been had. And the American American spectator sort of got an interesting article that Limbaugh, as I was listening to, I told you, I filter these talk shows. So I have a lot of regard for all of the major conservative talk shows. I mean, how do you get 5, 8, 10 million, 2 million? How do you get those kinds of numbers of viewers? Unless you have something going on. And I'm not talking about TV where there's only limited choices and somebody gets the choice because there's only 4 to choose from. In conservative talk radio, there's literally hundreds and thousands of choices. So when you've got the top 8, 10 players, garnishing, well, again, it's the 80-20 rule, isn't it? It's the 80-20 rule. 20% of the talk show hosts are going to get 80% of the viewership. In this case, it's like I told you, it could be $5.95, it can be $10.90. In the ideas of talk radio, I think maybe 5 or 10% of the talkers got 80%. I mean, Rush Limbaugh, hey, there you go right there. What's his take on it, huh? You know, he's in the top 1%, but usually what I talk about is Savage, Levin, Hannity, Limbaugh, I like Hewitt, I like Medved, you know, the national guys. To me, they're right on the money, 80% to 90% of the time. It's that damned other 5 or 10% you have to be careful with, folks. So again, I'm talking about deception of the media and how they're trying to slant this thing towards Romney and the fact that they're in the bag. They're in the bag for the players to be, for the establishment. Whoever, gosh, man, it's complicated, isn't it? You think this stuff is easy figuring out? It's not easy figuring out. Just trying to decipher it without being so confused. I feel like a juror at the OJ trial. That'd be a good question, wouldn't it? Are you more confused with listening to media's assessment, or I should say judgment, shouldn't I? They don't assess, they darn right judge. They put a value system on everything they're supposed to do, huh? By definition of who they are. Should be no surprise. Should be no surprise. You really think Watergate would have happened if these were Democrats? Of course not. How can you honestly say it? And knowing all that we know now, isn't the media really about what they don't tell us? Isn't the media really about now what they don't tell us? We shouldn't judge people on what they do tell us. We should just plain disregard that because all they're trying to do is entertain us and distract us and make their money while uploading their agenda, protecting that which is their money. But check this analogy I just came across in my head. If Obama can talk about our nation being a bunch of negative laws, and by the way, he distorts that. They're not negative laws. They're positive laws. They tell you can, because we're a nation of positive laws that say, by definition, you can do anything you want to do, except this, as opposed to the other way around, like Obama would like it. We won't tell you what not to do. We'll just tell you what you have permission to do. It isn't about what you can't do, because you can't do everything unless we allow you to do it. This is a flip-flop that's going on. So on that same notion, I think we should judge the media the same way. It isn't so much what they tell us. Let's judge them by what they don't tell us. How's that? Huh? Let's judge them by what they don't tell us. And then with each story, I want you to think like this. I want you to think with each story, with each piece of information you hear, I want you to consider this scoring method. First of all, media or anyone else doing their job oftentimes will simply do what is expected of them. They're doing a decent job. Not to be applauded, not to be congratulated, not to be pat on the back. They simply did their job. If you think they did their job, but no gold star, nothing spectacular, they simply gave us what we would have expected them to give us, that's a zero. They lose no points, they gain no points. That's a zero. If they go out of the way to impress you enough to think that they did what was a good job, what was an extremely important job, something above and beyond what you could simply expect. Of course, that's relative now, isn't it, what you can expect from them? So this whole thing might be skewed by definition. You give them a plus one, a plus two, a plus three, four, and conversely, if they're beating up the story, if they're lying to you, if they're not being consistent, if they have an agenda, if they're doing anything other than less than expected, it's a negative one, a negative two, a negative three. And this is how we should judge the media. Because it's all about what we don't know that the news is supposed to be in existence for. This is supposed to be to make our friends. It isn't supposed to have us desire some other products. It isn't supposed to be there to make us feel sorry for those that have it less fortunate than us. You know, we could even go past that. I mean, first of all, some of these stories aren't even worth scoring, are they? Maybe that's how we should start. We should start first by saying, is this a story that's relative to the context of this news program? I bet you 80% of everything they show us, we could put a no. That's what we ought to do. Is it a negative one? Is it a, to what degree is it a no? To what degree is it a no? Or maybe that's what we do. That's what we do. Instead of scoring the content of a story, let's score the content of the news hour. They do 10 stories. Each story was either something we needed to see and expected to see, and that's a zero, something that we had no business seeing, we didn't need to see, we didn't care to see, it didn't teach us anything, it wasn't important, etc. That would be a negative one, a negative two, a negative three. And if it was something that we really should have saw and they showed us, and it was something really good that they showed us that we don't typically see, that we should see, it's a plus one, a plus two, a plus three. Let's see how they come out in that scoring, huh? They'd be negative so far down, it'd be ridiculous. That'd be really interesting. Give me a database marketing expert here, and we'll put together some kind of script and score, and we'll just, that would be something. You know, that would be a website that people would gravitate to. Gosh, I wonder if I could put that in some kind of context of a proposal, of a business model, of a business plan, and sell it to somebody. Hey, wow, what an idea. Oh, hey, that's my idea. Oh, I thought of that. I could have done that. Well, you know what? This idea is nothing until you turn it into something. You know what I'm concerned with? Talk about media deception. And, you know, if you've been watching TV of late and going on to the History Channel and how they reconstruct history and all like that, I'm going to come back and talk about what I fear they might do with these debates and putting on a one-hour or a two-hour kind of program that would simply highlight their own take on the highlights. I wonder if that's something that's on their agenda. I wouldn't be surprised. Be right back.
Lay, lady, lay. Lay across my big breast bed. Lay, lady, lay. Lay across my big breast bed. Whatever colors you have in your mind, I show them to you, and you see them shine. Lay, lady, lay. Lay across my big breast bed. said to stay. Stay with your man a while. Until the break of day, let me see you make 'em smile. His clothes are dirty, but his hands are clean. And you're the best thing that he's ever seen. Stay, lady, stay. Stay with your man a while. Why wait any longer for the world to begin? You can have your cake and eat it too. Why wait any longer for the one you love when he's standing in front of you? Lay, lady, lay. Lay across my big brass bed. Stay, lady, stay. Stay while the night is still ahead. I long to see you in the morning light. I long to reach for you in the night. Stay, lady, stay. Stay while the night is still ahead.
Welcome back, folks. This is Tony Venuti with your ex-conservative radio hour, speaking with clarity and with purpose on the media's deception. The communist Marxist media. The media complex. The industrialized media complex versus the military industrialized complex. Isn't that really where it's at? Who's going to win this battle? Huh? We got forces on the right? We got forces on the right? Tony, come on. Conservatism is from the center. You keep saying that. Gosh, I know. I know I do. Just goes to show you how deep-rooted myth can be projected over the years, that it's immersed into our DNA. That every thought, here I am preaching daily for the past 3 years, how my understanding of natural law is paramount to what is, in fact, correct. That the universe was born. That conservatism as truth was born. It was derived from and is governed by. Is of the center. It's a core. It's a core belief. You heard that word before. Core belief. It's a core belief in you. Core belief. It's from the core. And when things expand, it expands just like my plus one, my zero, and negative. The same way, it expands full 360 degrees. And the center from which it's derived from always remains in the center. It isn't to the right. It isn't to the left. Not conservatism. All the other isms are. But not conservatism. Gosh, I was thinking about, I'll get back to this thing with the media in a sec, but I was thinking about this thing I talk about all the time with consumerism. You know, buy, purchase, make. And we're really lambasted over it by the left. And when we listen to the media, it's so confusing. It's so confusing to listen to the media try to tell us of how we have to buy, how we have to spend money, how we have to go out and do more stuff and get that credit card and buy that home, and interest rates are really low, and come on, just spur. It's okay how we're sort of, on one hand, told to go buy. We're going to go buy. Come on, keep up with the Joneses. Purchase, consume. Be the promiscuous consumers that we are as Americans, from which is the reason why the world hates us. The world doesn't hate us because of our so-called imperialism, although now that they've heard that for 50 years through the media, now they themselves are believing it. But the truth of the matter is, when you got people who are hungry, watching people who are fat and full, saying they're poor, that's how you build contempt around the world. You got it. It's not our imperialism. It's maybe our exceptionalism that makes a lot of those people who are hungry want to come over to America so they can have their piece of the pie based upon the fact that they've got ambition, that they have ambition. That ambition, in fact, trumps talent. That ambition simply says, give me a chance, you know. Give me a chance. I don't mind failing. I'll continue until I win. Give me a chance. So we have this media distorting on one hand, this idea of consumerism and just purchase. Yet on the other hand, you've got the left saying conservation, protect our environment. Less is in fact more. What a contradiction, huh? Maybe we should recycle clothes like we recycle water. Maybe we should have grants given out to people who have recycle shops for clothes, because we don't need all those clothes. How many of you right now have more clothes in your closet than you know what to do with? That if, in fact, you had to just consider your survival, how many of those clothes could you put aside and recycle? Recycle. Go right to the recycle store and recycle. Don't get 10 cents on that dollar for the $10 you spent for that $1 piece. Probably only worth $1 anyway, but by the time it was marked up and you purchased it, there you go. So look at what we could do for the environment. If everybody stopped going to Dillard's, stopped going to Kmart, stopped going to, you know, TJ Maxx, stopped going to the store and went to a recycle shop. And don't you be going over to those new car dealers now. You know, we have more cars in this universe than we would ever need. Hey, look what Cuba's been doing. They're still using cars from the 1950s. They're happy. So maybe we should just conserve and protect. What do you think, huh? See, these are the kinds of contradictions that if anyone was really paying attention, they would understand that this isn't about what's right for us as people. It's about what's good for them as individuals, whether they be on the right or the left, whether they be, I mean, come on. It's all about, I mean, good. And I'm just doing this because, well, I deserve it. I mean, we politicians, we mean well, but, I mean, why do you think I went through all of this so I wouldn't get any from me? Huh? Come on. You see, folks, without virtue, when virtue is lost, it doesn't matter what position you're in as a leader. It doesn't matter what position you're in as a player. It doesn't matter what position you are as a confidant. It doesn't matter, because without virtue, the kind of person you are becomes virtueless. When do we hear the discussion in the media brought up that is virtue even important to somebody? Why can't we talk in principled language? We know why, don't we? Of course we know why. This is the stuff I've been watching. I mean, I go to my site, beyondpuke.com, and you'll understand why I called it, okay? Because I just want to puke. It's beyond sensibility. And here I am, an ex-con, preaching virtue. Imagine that. This is what it's gotten to be. And now we got this Abramoff, what is his name, getting down on Newton. It turns out to be false, baby. It looks like this guy's been put into a trick bag, you know? Elliot Abrams, it's been all over the fact that he's been beaten up on me. You know, when I first saw him, with his book, I'm saying, oh boy, yeah, he's got it going. He's got the counterintuitive take, you know, someone that says, yeah, I did it. This is what I was involved with. He's got all this yellow journalism going on, all of this exploitative journalism going on. And it seems to me, according to American Spectator, that Abrams was fed talking points. And it seems as well that these talking points that were fed came from a story that has been taken out of context and hand-fed probably by ABC. Apparently, Newt Gingrich has had a stellar history of the media's role in politics. He's had an absolute fascinating take and understanding from which someone being where he was that saw with clarity what was happening could effect articulate. This is the bottom line. The media has had it in for Newt for over 30 years, and ABC in particular. Go ahead and read that story. I just sent you that link. I don't think I feel like reading it. I don't think I feel like reading. Well, I either feel like reading it or I don't feel like reading it, Tony, which is going to be. Well, like the second, I'm not going to read it. Okay? See, folks, sometimes you just have to deal with yourself, right? So I might as well just make it part of this reality show. But let me go on. I feel like I need to preach some more. I need to preach out to all of you and reach out to sort of get you. Because if you were born after the 70s, baby, you've been fooled, you've been giving a false narrative for so long. I was, you know, through all of this morning, I was doing a different take on myself. I was saying, maybe I think I'm talking like squawk soup. Talk about, conservative talk radio is awesome. You're the only one speaking what needs to be spoke. But here's the problem. No one's listening that doesn't already know. And all it does is reinforce what we already, of course we need it. It reinforces us every day and towards our belief system. But conservative talk radio, if it is not allowed to get to the masses of people, imagine this, like right now, let's just take the debates. Let's just take the people that would vote, okay, in the general election. I would imagine the people that would vote in the general election, and again, the 80-20 rule, and it could be 595, 1090, I think it's more in this case, 595 or 1090, but with that 80-20 rule, you've got 20% of all the total voters listening to 80% of the total amount of news that's been given to the candidates in the election process. That means 80% of the remainder of the people who vote only listen to 20% of the remaining information. What you have here is probably upwards to 90% of everybody that votes hearing the major networks, and only when they choose to hear the one or two or three stories. So the one or two articles they hear in the paper, or they listen to their friends. They are not immersed in it like we are. Hey, Greg, welcome. Talking about the media deception. Hey, you ought to call it the Gingrich deception, huh? I mean, is Fox News like in the bag for what is the establishment? And, you know, this establishment thing is really starting to show their light on what the establishment is, the establishment political structure, the elitists, the ones that control the message, no matter who the messenger is, from the Republican Party or from the Democratic Party. To have a true conservative in office is scaring those progressives to death, because we deal behind a position of righteousness. We deal behind a position of virtue. We deal behind a position of doing what is right and what is truth, and getting there through truth, not getting to where one wants to get through lies and deceptions. Of course, everything being equal, nothing is perfect. Blessed art thou who expect nothing. I shan't disappoint them. I'm not looking for perfection. I'm not going to make perfection the enemy of anything good that might come out of this process. But no, Let's not leave it to those that have the civic responsibility to keep us informed, alerted, and to also tell us what we don't know we don't know. Instead, they tell us what they want us to know, what they want us to believe, and when we don't do it, they are surprised. Hey, another surprise, the numbers in the media. You ever notice how they say that? Oh, another surprise. A surprise to the media is something that they didn't guess right. All surprises. So next time you hear the media surprise, just understand that that's a way of showing off the fact that, hey, we didn't get that right. We didn't get that right. Folks, you're listening to Tony Vadotti, and coming at you from an eyewitness account of the 1950s, having experience and able to articulate through the lenses of a child. You see, I'm an old cat, 60 years old, but I still have a child's eyes. I still see with a child's eyes, and I try to bring to you the absorption rate through a free stream of consciousness each day, Monday through Friday, 1 to 3 o'clock. I'll be right back.
I lost that love before. Got mad and closed the door. But you said, child, just once more. I chose you for the one. Now we're having so much fun. You treated me so kind. I'm about to lose my mind. You made me so very happy. I'm so glad you cause you came and you took control. You touched my very soul. You always showed me that loving you is where it's at. You made me so very happy. I'm so glad you came into my
thank you, baby.
Welcome back, folks, to the Tony Venuti Hour, your ex-conservative radio hour, speaking about, you know, you know, what's it all about? Oh, nothing at all, just a little survival, something like that, you know. Come on now, Tom, shut that thing off. There you go, very good. Gosh, I'm so great with technology stuff. You know what I'm going to be doing today after this show? I'm going to be putting together a homemade sign for my pool tournament using letters that I'm going to be spitting out of the printer and pasting up on a piece of wood, a sizable note at the club. And I, as long as it doesn't rain, I guess that sign might work, but it's going to look really sloppy, but maybe it should anyway. It's just a dive bar. I should go online and Google tiling signs. I bet you there's some kind of site that allows someone like me to say, I want to make a sign that's 6 foot wide. I got a 6 foot wide piece of wood, and I need to have letters that are going to be big enough to contain my language, while at the same time being large enough for, you know, people driving by to see. Now, I know this from being a printer. I know from sign makers, they actually have, you know, the distances, what size, point size, and everything else allows somebody to see from here and from there. But to me, it's going to be some organic learning, as I so often do. I want to go on again about the media's deception. I want to go on about the fact that I think they need to be judged in a new kind of way. We need to look at media as a new kind of way, not as something that we're glad to hear. Hey, wow. Hey, we're really glad to hear that. Thank you so very much. No, I want us to be able to judge or to assess media on the fact that they're giving us content that we would want to hear, that we would look for it if we knew to look for it. But because we don't know to look for it, we don't have the resources that the media has, we entrust them to find the things that we need to hear about. 80% of everything we hear on these media outlets are things we don't need to hear about. They're displacing the things we need to hear about. The things, I believe, that the media is complicit in making sure we don't know about. You see? Because just like Obama talks about us being a nation of negative laws, oh, we can't do this and we can't do that. Yeah, but we can do everything else, can't we? We can do everything else except a few exceptions. So maybe we ought to handle the media the same way, like in turn it upside down. No, you can do that. You can do what we let you do. We're going to tell you what's good for you, and you're only going to do what we let you do. Don't you presume that you can do everything except a few things. No, you just need to think nothing anymore. You need to think zero. You need to think no more. You're simply going to behave in the manner that we tell you how to behave. You're going to think in the manner that we tell you how to think. And you're going to see the news that we only want to show you because it's about what you don't know. What you don't know won't hurt you. Well, let's take that to the other side. What you will know will hurt you, especially if what you will know isn't true. What you don't know won't hurt you. Oh, yeah, it will. Oh, yeah, it will. ignorance is bliss, huh? And misery loves company. No wonder liberals have such a good time at parties. Ignorance is bliss and misery loves company. Ah, man. I'll tell you, I hate being around negative energy. I always have. It just never made me feel right. Never made me feel. It's like drinking warm water that's got some stuff in it from a swamp, as opposed to a fresh, sparkling spring. Isn't that what it's like? Isn't truth like a fresh, sparkling spring? Now that just entered my mind. I don't have that written down. I don't believe I've ever said that before. But if you think about when you're comparing the notion of being even immersed in spring water, like have you ever been swimming in the spring, in the falls, and you're in that fresh water? You can see right down to the bottom like it's glass. Isn't that truth? And what we're swimming in now reminds me of the tsunami flow, huh? All that crud and muck and crapola. Cleanliness is next to godliness, no? It truly is. Clean is something that we can all relate to in many, many facets of our, how shall I say, existence. Whether it's being in a high altitude elevation in the mountains where the air is fresh and sharp and crackly and just brisk. Something about the essence when things are yet to be disturbed, how they actually are in their essence. That's all I want the news to be. That's all I want the media to be. I want to feel good that I drank from that fresh glass of spring water. I want to feel good that I'm breathing that air that came from the mountain's mist, huh? I don't want to partake in somebody's perspective. I don't want to partake in somebody's own imagination of what things should be in one's own utopia. I just want the cold, hard truth. I don't have to like it. I don't have to like it. And don't tell me if I like it or not. Don't tell me if I like it or not. I'll figure that out for myself. And while you're at it, media, in quotations, while you're at it, media, in quotations, I want you to tell me who you are. I want you to tell me what you're about. You demand that of all the people you talk to. Why can't we get that from the media? Just where are you coming from? Just from what perspective are you looking to what filter so that we can determine ourselves? The writing between the lines that's inferred when one has a particular filter triggered. Huh? I wonder how many of those babies on Fox News are trust fund babies. I wonder how many people in the media are trust fund babies. I wonder how many in the media are drug users. I wonder how many people in the media have had more than one marriage. I wonder how many people in the media have had an abortion. I wonder how many people in the media have had spousal abuse, child abuse. I wonder how many people in the media, you get my point, everybody's afraid to ask them. I mean, how do you ask them? You can ask them on their blog. You can send them an email, of course, like the tree that fell in the woods and nobody was there to hear it make a sound. Did it really fall? So they'll just ignore you. I often say the opposite of love isn't hate, it's indifference. So they know that game. I'm telling you, man. They just ignore you. You go away. And then if you do get lucky enough to go onto the show, it's probably because something's in it for them, which means you're having to build up to and fortunate enough to finally be on the air, and you're so grateful, you're not going to risk never be putting on the air again, my goodness. Oh, thank you for having me. Oh, thank you for having me. Look at them suck up to those media people. Oh, thank you for having me. That's why you don't get anybody asking the media hard questions. They're so afraid that they'll ever be asked again on the show again that they don't ask them. It completely muffles everything. Oh, thank you for having me. Again, that martini, that olive in the martini glass that I would like to be, where I could listen in on everybody's little plans as they have their little cocktail parties. Oh, what a great time that would make. What a great time that would make. I mean, it's like a bunch of children gossiping about something they never have to worry about retaliation. They feel so buffered because they're in the, they're in the clique. They're in the in crowd, Lucky them. It's important to be in the in crowd, isn't it? Oh, it surely is. No, let me tell you why. Because misery loves company, that's why. And when you lack self-esteem, when you lack purpose, when you lack your own self-identity, life is right off the bat going into a perverted state of mind. And all of a sudden you look for a purpose. You look for a purpose. You look for a reason why you're alive. You can't figure out why you got things and other people don't. You can figure it out. And that very notion starts to build a little discontent. And then your parents start ignoring you because they're too busy chasing the American dream, which is to give you a better life than they had before. They bought into this trick bag, this lie, this lie of deceit, which through time creates a certain contempt for the very parents that you supposedly believe you love. But without self-identity, without self-purpose, without meaning in your life, you end up being attracted to, you're attracted to things that are looking for people just like you. And when they see you, when those parasites see you, they say, hey, man, come on over. We're some pretty cool dudes, you know? We listen to the right music. We go, we play with the right parties. We're on the inside. Come on, baby. You fit right in. Come on over. And I've been watching the 50s and the 60s. I've seen the left movement, the communist movement, hijack Hollywood in pop culture. One little step at a time, inch by inch, step by step. That's all it took. The lack of self-image. So you have all these musicians, all these teen idols that you like. You see, that's important. You like them. You see? Everything's about feel good on the left. Everything's about feel good on the left. And if they can just get you to like them, they own you. If they can just get you to like them, they own you. Think about everything you hear about when your mind says, using rational thought, who likes hearing what we don't like to hear? Who likes hearing an answer to which we didn't believe that was the answer? Unless we have character and we accept it. Once we establish that it's the truth, right? Once we rubber stamp that ourselves to see that it's the truth. We may not like it, but we're not going to discount it as the truth. Well, that's not on the lips, you see. The lips, they'll do something else. If they don't like the messenger, or if they don't like the message, forget it. It's over. It's done for. We're idiots. We're stupid. Liberalism isn't sexy, folks. No. Okay? Conservatism is sexy. Taking responsibility for your own actions. Being held accountable. Not whining and crying. Oh, woe is me. Oh, woe is me. Ah, come on. I'll be right back. Fox News is on an all-out frontal assault, huh? Attacking Gingrich for president. What, too many debates? Sure, too many debates. Why too many debates? Isn't it true that the more they talk, the more they show who they really are? I mean, ask yourself, what's in it for the media to have less debates? I got it. Ooh, ooh. Wouldn't they have to buy still more ads? Of course they would. Oh, more money for the media. Oh, God. $1 billion from Obama alone isn't going to be enough. Oh, but they would. If it wasn't for these debates, they'd have to buy more ads. And then think about this. Those poor politicians that couldn't afford to buy ads would be less than, how shall I say, competition quality. They wouldn't be able to compete, would they? Would Santorum still be here if there wasn't this many debates? I don't think so. In fact, I'm not sure if Newt would be here if there wasn't this many debates. Certainly in the beginning, because he wasn't getting the kind of money that he is now. And then three, who's the one that's really shining in the debates? Who is the one that's been the beneficiary to the greatest results of the debates, the greatest potential to a participant? Who is the one that shined the greatest? Was it not Newt? And we all know they don't want him. So why all the debates? Yeah, why all the debates? I got it. Sure, I got it. Yeah, I got people talking about, like in Facebook, somebody chiming in, and he goes to say, three men that are the same. One man who stands apart, never wavered in 30 years of public service, Gingrich. Romney and Santorum, all Washington politicians. Romney, although not a Washington elite, like the other two, still has fallen in the mode. All three are the same? Okay, if you want to put that on a good side, then I'll consider that okay, even though I'd still disagree with it. But you're actually talking about like they're all the same on the bad pretense. Well, bottom line is, same is an absolute statement, and I reject that on its surface, which was my reply. You could use the word similarities, and then I might give you credit for being able to think using logic, reason, and deduction, to which I that might therefore spend some time considering debating this with someone. But as soon as I see somebody use false premise of thought, as soon as I start to realize that someone's premise of their thinking capacity is ill-wavered, I'm not going to participate. I have clarity, and I don't need to be reinforced. Silence is golden. It's, you know, silence is something that's expressed. Confidence is something that's expressed silently. I don't have to be told by 1,000 other people I'm right. I have the power of certainty. I'm not afraid of looking silly. Oh, don't look silly. We don't want to do that. Oh. Hey, man, silly can work for you sometimes, let me tell you. Mark Levin, I listened to about 10 or 15 minutes yesterday. I might play some of it with you today because it was excellent. It was just excellent. I mean, these guys, no matter, you know, the top ones I talk about all the time, you know, Limbaugh, Levin, Savage, and about six or seven or eight of them that I use in name. When they're on, they're the best. And I feel that it's my position that why even try to participate in this arena when all I really want to do is bring this information to you all, my audience, much like a DJ. But I do fancy myself the conservative talk police, because it isn't so much how good they are, it's how bad they're not. And I'm going to make this statement again. I don't care how much I applaud these guys, that when they do great, they do great. But to the degree that they're self-interest or selfish interest in terms of being paid for and in the corporate structure of communications, they can only go so far. Remember that. remember that. If you take away that filter from the lens of what you're listening to when you hear it, you're foolish. But I am absolutely someone that is not afraid to, on one hand, say, listen to these guys, aren't they great? And on the other hand, say, what is he talking about? And giving you good reason. Let's do this. We're going to listen to some Mark Levin from yesterday.
Simply the smartest man on radio, and you can call him pizza. When Gingrich was leading a revolution to take over the House, he was a staffer to Dick Lugar, the moderate Republican senator of Indiana. I mean, I can go on and on about this. But I wanted to bring in a friend of mine, a very dear friend of mine, who also worked in the Reagan administration. As a matter of fact, he worked in the political office. And that would be Jeffrey Lord. How are you?
I'm just great, my fellow Reagan revolutionary. How are you?
I'm doing great. Now, we have this long piece, Jeff, in the National Review by our friend, Elliot Abrams, and he is a friend.
Indeed.
And I'm reading this and said, did he serve in the same administration as I served in? I mean, I don't remember Gingrich being the problem attacking us all over the place on foreign policy. Do you?
No. Absolutely not.
What you wrote today.
Elliot Abrams would come to the White House. He was very kind, and I loved the guy. He would come to the White House and do these briefings for us on foreign policy. I would always call him. He would always come. He was terrific. He never said to me, ever, Newt Gingrich is a problem on anything. And there is a reason for that, because Newt Gingrich was not a problem. To the best of my knowledge, he never said it to anybody in our office, or certainly I would have heard about it. And our office at that time included Governor Daniels and included now former Governor Haley Barbour. We would have known if Newt Gingrich was a problem, because we would have gone and talked to Newt Gingrich. So I never heard this from Elliot Abrams at all, ever.
And yeah, he writes about it in the National Review Online, as if it was a big issue.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, let me
just add one other point. They point out Reagan's diary as if there's something wrong there when Reagan mentions Gingrich once. And by the way, he's not doing so in a negative way whatsoever. You would think, and I've read those diaries, they're fascinating.
Yeah.
You would think if Newt Gingrich was a huge problem on our foreign policy, on Iran-Contra, and on and on and on, his name would appear more than once in the diaries of the President of the United States.
Absolutely correct. And
they appear once, having nothing to do with it.
That's right. That's right. Newt Gingrich was at one with Ronald Reagan on values, and there's just no question whatsoever about it. Or, believe me, this would have been a big deal then in the day. We would have had to do something for it. And, you know, a powerful White House, as the Reagan White House was, could have done something. I mean, we could have cut him off on any number of things. This is, you know, the world of hardball White House politics. Never happened, ever. He was considered a solid supporter of the president, always.
And you are aware of Nancy Reagan's reputation, a wonderful lady and loyal to the bone to her husband.
Huh. I can only say, Mark, when I saw that video, there is no way on God's green earth that Mrs. Reagan would have stood up at a fundraiser, would have been there at the fundraiser, first of all, that had anything to do with Newt Gingrich. If she thought for a second that Newt Gingrich was an enemy of Ronald Reagan's or was attacking Ronald Reagan, she never would have done it.
And I want to play this for everybody. Hold on. I want to play it for everybody, Jeffrey, while you're here. This is Nancy Reagan in 1995 at the Goldwater Institute in Arizona at a dinner. I want you to listen to this, folks. And what Jeff and I are telling you is, knowing Ms. Reagan as we did and her reputation, there is absolutely no way that she would speak well of an individual who would have spoken ill of her husband even once. Am I right about that?
Absolutely.
All right, here we go. Cut five. Go.
They believe the government should simply get out of the way. Ronnie and Barry fought for those principles which today have been overwhelmingly embraced. So they must have done something right. Just take a look at the extraordinary men and women who make up the 104th Congress, and of course its distinguished speaker, Newt Gingrich. The dramatic movement of 1995 is an outgrowth of a much earlier crusade that goes back half a century. Barry Goldwater handed the torch to Ronnie, and in turn, Ronnie turned that torch over to Newt and the Republican members of Congress to keep that dream alive. So you and I have to dismiss what we know, what we saw and heard with our own body parts. You and I would have to pretend that Nancy Reagan in this one case embraced somebody who was repeatedly hostile and outspoken against her husband. This is just crap, isn't it?
Absolutely, it's crap. I mean, I didn't hear the name Mitt Romney there, but the point is, she would never have been in the room with Newt Gingrich if she. And let's just remember, in 1995, at that point, everybody knew that President Reagan was now suffering from Alzheimer's. The fact that she was there instead of Ronald Reagan himself was because he was ill. Under those circumstances, in particular, for her to go out of her way to do this, to be there, to hold the flag for Ronald Reagan and pass that torch in his name to Newt Gingrich tells you all you need to know.
All right, well, I mean, I really don't know what else to say other than the what's been going on the last 48 hours has absolutely shaken me. Because if this is...
No, I have to share this with you a little bit. And when I heard that, Abramoff, it shook me too. I was actually shaken in my boots because I'm saying to myself, you know, and I was even thinking from the perspective of what if this is true, you know. Again, it's the sum of its parts are greater than the whole, and everything being equal, all of these people are less than, how shall I say, ideal candidates, if you want to look at it like that, if you want to look at it from the pristine waters of the truth where 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 years ago we sort of presumed that our candidates were crystal clear, and then, of course, we find out after the fact that they weren't, but that it was moot, right? It was moot. Anyway, more of this.
What the conservative movement has become, one lie after another, weaved together in a basket of bullcrap, and I don't want to be part of it. And I don't believe this is what the conservative movement has become. I believe we are up against an entrenched establishment that does not want to give an inch. They see their new friend, Romney, who at the same time Nancy Reagan was saying this, Romney was saying he's a progressive and he was independent and he had nothing to do with Reagan and Bush. At the very same time, she's saying this, the same exact year, well, the year after. And the stuff I'm reading, the stuff being read, I'll tell you what bugs me, and I told my audience this, Jeff. For Romney, who until really the last 5, 6, 7 years has suddenly seen the light become a, because imagine that, you're an adult, you're in business, you have a family, you live through the Reagan era, and it's not until you want to be President of the United States as a Republican nominee that suddenly you're conservative across the board. You know what I'm saying? And then you're the guy attacking, you know, like Fred Thompson from the right. You're the guy attacking Giuliani from the right, Mike Huckabee from the right, and now you're attacking Newt Gingrich from the right? You got to be kidding me.
What this means is he's full of tactics. He is not full of the conservative philosophy and conservative values. That's it. And you know, I went back and looked, Mark. Ronald Reagan got more votes in Massachusetts than Mitt Romney did when Ronald Reagan was running for president of the United States. And here is Mitt Romney running from him, and yet he couldn't get as many votes as Ronald Reagan. Now, what does that tell you in terms of general philosophical values and understanding the way the political world works?
I'm watching my new friend, I can't hear him, Charles Krauthammer, commenting on the Gingrich and Reagan issue. It's hilarious. In 1984, my new friend, Dr. Krauthammer, was a Mondale guy. It's just hard to stomach all this that's going on. Tell us, doctor, exactly what did Reagan think of Gingrich? How would he know?
Right.
And by the way, I say this not as a special plea to Gingrich. I've told you and others that if I were learning today, I'd be learning for Santorum. But all of that aside, what's right is right.
Right. I mean, I have been critical of all of these folks. I've been critical of Newt on the Bain Capital situation, et cetera. But, you know, I was there, Mark. You were there. We know better than this. I mean, this is just, to use your word, this is just crap. This is absolutely not true. And to try and sell it smacks of, desperation. I anybody can put any characterization they want on it, but I will say it's false. flat out false. It is not true. Now, let me just say this. We're only having to discuss this because of what we have heard and seen for the last 48 hours. I think it is outrageous that we even have to deal with this. This Republican primary has been dragged into the toilet, and it started with these 3 weeks, multi-million dollar super PAC with Romney staffers attacking, trying to drag somebody down. You'll recall Newt said, let's have debates, 101, Mitt. I don't have any money. He didn't have any money at the time. They wouldn't go for it. These are tactics that are very destructive to the conservative movement, in my humble opinion. They're very destructive to our ability to beat Obama. I don't mind a long primary season where we're duking it out on substance and principle. But the problem is Romney can't do that. So what they're doing is giving stuff to websites, giving stuff to columnists, giving stuff to guests on Fox and these other shows, and trying to destroy their opponents. And I'm going to tell you one other thing. If Santorum were the main opponent, I think they'd be doing the same thing to him.
Absolutely. I mean, this is situational. Situational ethics, as they say. I mean, it's new today. If Newt vanished tonight and it was Santorum or someone else, this is what they would be doing. And suddenly Rick Santorum would not be a conservative at all, and we would go back and...
See, a situational actually talks to the concept of life that no matter what kind of plan you make, everything becomes situational. But you go to work and all of a sudden you find there's an accident at the intersection on your way to work. All of a sudden you have to divert your plans. You have to make new plans because everything's situational. Not. Not unless you have principles. Not unless you have boundaries. Not unless you have guidelines. Not unless you have perfume.
You're all these kind of things. This I find disturbing.
So Rick Santorum, they'd be twisting his words, they'd be calling him a liberal from a guy who 10 years ago was distancing himself from Reagan and 15 years ago was calling himself a progressive.
That's right. I this is astonishing. Absolutely astonishing to think the hustle here that you could get away with this. I mean, this is just flatly not so. I mean, you can say the sun rises in the west, but that isn't going to make it happen.
Well, it will when you have your lunchbox stolen from you on your way to school. And each and subsequent year that you've grown up, you've had your lunchbox taken from you on your way to school. And you've never done anything to counter that, so you're subject to being controlled by what are you going to do about it, politics? By what are you going to do about it, politics? And when you've got the media on their side and with the culture of celebrity on their side, it's all about what are you going to do about it, politics? What are you going to do about it? See? That's what it comes right down to, right? What are we going to do about it?
You know, I pride myself on doing this program, getting into some of this stuff, but always wanting to keep the focus on where it needs to be, on Obama, on what's going on in the country, and I'm going to continue to do that. But
see, and that's the concern, isn't it? That's the concern. Even when we're legitimately talking, or I should say, even when our talk is of legitimate concern at the moment, again, situational development, huh? Crisis management, huh? There you go. Situational development equals crisis management. There you go. All forever the two shall meet equals liberalism. But every time we're talking about cleaning up our own mistruths that have been out there in the world, sort of like somebody throwing mud onto your just clean carpet, and now all of a sudden you have to spend more time cleaning the carpet that you just installed instead of going on to the other rooms and fixing what needs to be in the other rooms. We've displaced our energy, haven't we? And by definition, the enemy has succeeded, haven't they?
You can't ignore 48 hours of nonstop, unbridled, vicious, poisonous attacks and just pretend this isn't going to have an effect on the outcome.
You know, I began to suspect when Romney got this line off in that last debate about the line in the Reagan diaries. I mean, it took, and I thought immediately, I need to write about this because I know where, I thought I knew, and I was correct where this is going to go, what they were going to do. And today was pylon day on Newt, on Ronald Reagan. So, you know, I've been able to detail it, and I'm sure that you have been able to do the same thing. I mean, there's too many of us alive and running around here that were there. I mean, we were there in the room. So, I mean, Mitt Romney was nowhere to be seen. He didn't even share the same values here.
Is Mitt Romney in the Reagan diaries?
I doubt it. No. No. As a matter of fact, I didn't even watch. I didn't even see George Romney.
Well, you know, the thing is this. They make the argument, well, he's only in there once. My point is, if he did all the things that they say he did, and he was so rotten to Ronald Reagan, Reagan would have put him in the diary a whole lot more, and he would have said those things about him.
Absolutely. I mean, I've gone through, and I'll give you a quick example, is Jack Kemp. And Jack Kemp is in there, and they had disagreements. There is no question that Jack Kemp was your ultimate Reaganite. But did they disagree on occasion? Sure. Did Newt Gingrich say things in disagreement with Ronald Reagan on occasion? That's what happens when you're president of the United States. Did he ever, ever express some sort of fundamental value difference with Ronald Reagan? Absolutely not ever, ever. Or, in a practical sense, those of us in the White House political office would have been talking to Newt Gingrich about it. And it never happened. When we talked to Newt Gingrich, and we talked to him a lot, it was always in terms of what he could do to help President Reagan. Always.
All right, Jeffrey Lord, former, what was your title?
I was
Associate
Director of Political Affairs, White House Political Affairs.
Title
when you're young.
Oh, yeah. Well, keep up the good work. God bless you.
Thank you, my friend.
You take care. I was Associate Director of Presidential Personnel at the White House, and I was also Chief of Staff to the Attorney General of the United States, among other positions, and I never heard any of this stuff. Gee, imagine me going through life so blissfully and not knowing that Newt Gingrich was a Marxist, Reagan-hating vindicator. I never knew that, and yet I read all this today.
And you know, I was taken aback the same way. And you know, here's the deal. This guy, Abrams, was set up in the media to talk about his book for the past month now, right? We all sort of dug him, didn't we? We all sort of dug this guy, don't we? Which, I mean, he's sexy, isn't he? And now he's going after all the dirty. It's like the mafia coming out from the cold. Like what was it, the Velocci Papers? The first mafia guy that exposed La Cosa Nostra, the Nazi papers, yeah. I should know, hey, I'm Italian. Hey, it's my heritage. Not! Give me a break, man. We just was responsible for most of Western civilization, thank you, along with the Greeks. But I don't take personal responsibility for that. Hey. I'm not white, and I'm not black. I am Italian. I've been seeing life through the filter of being neither one of yous. So, that's the name of that tune. So I find it, we all knew this was going to be a pretty, pretty dirty fight, didn't we, huh? But did we know that we'd have so many people on our same league, you know, the Conservative League? Or the Republican League, because these are just parties. The league is not based on ideology. They're based upon the party, right? So we've got the Republican League, and we've got the Liberal League. Those leagues should be based on ideology, but then again, where would conservatives go? Certainly not to Republicans. Boy, doesn't Republican come from the root word republic? And isn't that what we're about? Something that's built on a foundation of laws from which people are represented through their individual vote, brought into a mass count, and made a winner rule until he becomes the loser in re-election. Republic. Boy, they hijacked that word too, didn't they? Yeah, I've been thinking about the 80-20 rule a lot. I use it a lot, and I'll make this because it applies to everything. And maybe that's the problem, is the reality. I'm actually trying to consider the fact that the 80-20 rule might be proof on how, just through natural law, especially when you consider that evil exists in the world, that to the degree that there's, for every two people, there's eight disagreeing with the two, it doesn't matter until there's a certain critical mass to where the numbers sort of just fall in on themselves. The weight of our own success, if you will. The weight of the mass, sort of like that video, if you've been watching the news of late, they showed a ice skating rink in Russia. That film, somebody was videotaping the game, and the roof collapsed from its weight in snow during a snowstorm in Russia. Well, I wonder if the reality of the 80-20 rule, of the critical mass, of the weight, is cleared with the evil that exists, you see. Because it's the evil that turns the 80% in terms of those numbers. It's evil that, it's like leadership. In a war, you take out the leaders first, because without leaders, everybody's lost. But there's been leaders. There's been silent leaders in Marxism. There's been leaders that exist without legs, without arms. They're like avatars of thought. They're like click, hello. It's built into the culture, into the industries, into our mass media industry. You know, they talk about the war machine. The industrial mecca that profits off of war, as opposed to the industry that profits off of making people think a certain way, see a certain thing, believe a certain way. How about that industrial complex and all the millions it's raking in billions? Meanwhile, we're afraid to talk back to them. Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me. Levin had it right. 48 hours of nonstop, unbridled, vicious attacks. Now, I'm saying, how can we possibly... I mean, we're only human, man. I guarantee you that if you're listening to me, and if I'm talking to you, and if you've been with me for more than 5 minutes, we're probably smarter than most people out there because we're not afraid of ears, and we're not affected with logic, reason, and deduction. But how many people are that? You know yourselves. Can you imagine 90% of everybody voting probably listens to 20 minutes to an hour to 2 hours of what they consider news a week, with the exception of what they hear on this soundbite or that soundbite? We're so, I mean, I know people that do nothing except listen to football and sports shows. That's all they listen to. Or they're into the reality shows, or they're doing games on the computer. Whereas how many people like us are immersed in what's going on today, tomorrow, and the next day, and how about just getting some reference from yesterday? Ooh, and how it panned out, and who was able to see from what they said in the past and what they're doing now matches up. Just watch them. Just watch the people that are always talking about what they've done in the past, what they're going to do in the future. That's how to leave out, very coincidentally, what they're doing today. And when you think about it, what they're doing today is spinning what they did yesterday and what they're going to do tomorrow. And it's all about their continuation to create a sense of warmth, a sense of, I like these people. Oh, you know, they give us enough things to entertain ourselves with, distracting ourselves from what we really need to be knowing, taking us from the citizen and placing us into the consumer, where it's all about how we feel and about our desires to hear what we want to hear and how is that all set up to begin with. You'll be real bad. Let me go back.
back in time a bit. I'll be right back, folks.
Now that I love a girl and a ruby is her name, hear me talking now. This girl don't love me, but I love her just the same. What I say, whoa.
He's an axe murderer.
just like I have more respect now for professional wrestling than when I did in my day, because at least professional wrestling these days admit that it's make-believe. Admit that it's make-believe, but it's serious make-believe, isn't it? Isn't that stuff serious make-believe? I mean, when you see those guys get slammed on their back, on their belly, whatever, forget the shots to the head and all that nonsense that doesn't draw any blood when you know it should. We know that's make-believe. But even that takes a certain talent to be able to pull their punches. Can you imagine somebody missing a pulled punch? You got me! Oh, man, now I'm really mad at you. I'm going to get you in the locker room, baby. Now, Brutus, baby, don't disappoint me. Come on now. It's not fake. I've got a guy in this room here trying to tell me professional wrestling isn't fake. I mean, it's good fake stuff. It's the kind of fake stuff that you can get hurt with. They're great. I mean, their athletic ability is to be noted. No doubt about it. To take those falls, those controlled drops, that they have to practice and be good at, hey, you know what, take two or three or four of them in a row and tell me you just didn't play 3 hours football game without practice for the past years and years. The shape they're in indeed.